hearts. Let me ardently desire for the heart-warming meeting with Thee, well-equipped with piety to gain my end on the day of requital. Let me follow into the footsteps of Thy representatives. Let me disassociate myself from the mannerism of Thy enemies. Let me pass my time in this world by praising and glorifying Thee.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
The life of Ali can be summarized in a symbolic way. It's a life which started in a masjid and ended in a masjid. If you look at Ali in a symbolic way, he was born in the house of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Kaaba, which is Masjid al-Haram. And he was fatally injured in the mihrab of Masjid al-Kufa. And in between that viladat and shahadat, he lived in a house in Medina where the door of his house opened into Masjid al-Nabi. What can you say about someone? Was born in a masjid. We have four important masajids in the world. One is the birthplace of Ali. Another is the shahadat place of Ali. The third one is the house of Ali. And this is where we see that he became, you know, an embodiment of true Islam and the pure Islam. And this is where we see that one of the fadilat of Ali is that Ali never ever, neither his childhood nor his youth nor later on, ever placed his forehead down in worshipping any idol. And this is something where we see a unique status of Ali among the Muslims who actually were born before Islam, among the Sahaba. Almost all of them were either worshippers and mushrik before they became Muslims. But when it comes to Ali, he has this, you know, privilege and honor. No one can be, you know, same like him.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Black and white.
En los tiempos modernos, en la época contemporánea.
In the modern era, in contemporary times, there is a constant phenomenon that occurs in countries and nations. It is a form of political involvement and power. In this way, we recognize it with a name, with an ideology, with a practice that is fascism. When we talk about fascism, sometimes some people, interested or out of ignorance, only pay attention to a certain period of its existence. At the time between the war and the Mussolini period, and 10 years later, Mussolini and Hitler.
Mussolini y Hitler.
In the form that was expressed there, the defense of financial capital and the anti-communist struggle. But fascism means more than that. Fascism is represented in Salazar in Portugal, Franco in Spain, Suharto in Indonesia, Pinochet in Chile, and Videla in Argentina. In the end, there are many of them. They are dead. Yes, in the case of Chile, we're talking about 3,227 people murdered by the regime, without counting the disappeared detainees. If we add to that, there are 22,000 murdered by the regime in defense of big capital in Argentina. 22,000. And in old Spain, in Franco Spain, 150,000 people were assassinated. In Suharto's period in Indonesia, there are practically close to 1 million murdered innocents. In the first days of the coup against the patriot Sukarno, there were more than 500,000 assassinated people, mainly union leaders, workers, communists, democratic people, people of the left who wanted sovereignty and did not want to be a colony of U.S. imperialism. Fascism is then the political and power expression of capital when it enters in a time of crisis. It enters a moment in which it cannot continue with the same democratic way of holding power. Fascism itself is not a single movement and not a single model. In fact, in the Chilean dictatorship, there were people who thought it was not a fascist regime because they did not see the development of a large Mussolini-style corporate state and they did not see privatization. Today, throughout the world, it is implemented in an institutional form. Pay attention. Let's not forget that Hitler came to power and government through elections. It happens that those who support the neoliberal model at all costs, who want to privatize everything, and at the same time use an iron fist against the labor unions, against the strikes, against the student mobilizations, they say they are not fascists. They are fascists. They have the same fundamental interest in defending the oligarchy. We already know what their methods cause. They also have a very strong racist and chauvinistic ideological component in the world. There are the Zionists, for example, and their anti-Arab and anti-Palestinian measures. We clearly witness this anti-Chinese, anti-Russian, anti-Islamic policy at the international level that also replaced at some point what was the anti-Jewish policy. Today, many of Jews and Zionists are really fascists. Fascism has multiple ways of expressing itself. But what unites it, what puts it at the center of everything, is the defense of financial capital. Fascism is represented in Bolsonaro in Brazil and Trump in the United States. Be careful. The Democrats with Biden are still practicing fascism by supporting reactionary governments and the servants of big capital.
Eduardo Artes.
I'm Eduardo Artes. This is Black and White. Today in our program, Black and White, I talk with Alvaro Ramos. He is a rector at Academy of Christian Humanism University. Welcome to our program, Alvaro.
Thank you very much, Eduardo.
After the end of the Second World War, some thought that fascism and its expressions had no place in modern society. However, today we see that different expressions of fascism survive, and its historical definition manifests itself once again. It is the policy that comes to defend the financial capital and often expresses the power of financial capital. There is not a single way of expressing fascism. We didn't even witness that in the Second World War. There were different people in that time, like Benito Mussolini, Hitler, Hirohito, Francisco Franco, and Salazar, who acted differently.
How do you see these fascist expressions today, which, by the way, are present not only in old Europe, but also in Latin America?
There's an interesting debate that can be a bit abstract, but is meaningful. Nowadays, people talk about different terms like radical right, the far right, neo-fascism, neo-Nazism, and etc. I believe that this whole set of categories are adequate in political essence and determine the type of actor that is on stage. They all have something in common. As you said, there's a point that unites those figures, which is to defend the interests of big financial capital in particular circumstances. Normally, in a sense of stability and economic growth, when neoliberalism is expanding, these expressions are marginal, because hegemony and the construction of consensus regarding growth are produced quiet by a spontaneous order. On the other hand, when this system enters into crisis and world economic growth, and particularly of certain countries, shrink, violent actors enter the scene, and precisely processes of failed revolutions take place, which leaves the condition for an onslaught based on the frustration of the countries. The frustration of countries generates the extreme right that halts the desires for changes. We need to look into a certain issue that is related to social psychology, media management, and economic contraction that needs a brutal force to push and finally puts the most violent actors of the economic system in the position of defense of their interests.
En una lógica de defensa brutal de sus intereses.
Correcto. O sea, tenemos la crisis.
We witness the anxiety of people in the face of financial crisis and its consequences. Then we immediately have this response. There is a factor that rises from self-proclaimed forces in labor unions in countries. I'm talking about the social democracy, particularly at least in the last century. Today, we could say that new tendencies, new lefts and postmodern ideologies do not provide a solution, nor are they able to help people with their unhappiness to overcome social difficulties. So we face this strong expression of fascism. How do social democracy and today's indefinite left pave the path for the extreme right that comes in the defense of the new liberal system?
Del sistema neoliberal.
That's right. I believe that today no political actor speaks to all of the people in the society. Why? Because a society has different rhythms and expectations. I think that the new left, in the logic of incorporating other perspectives, spokes of an urban world, but it also has a very important lack of the sphere of the popular world and especially of the rural world. There are different ways of understanding the problems and different expectations and different solutions in fragmented societies. In this framework, the authoritarian solution is very important because they say that they're going to solve this problem through an order imposed from world powers, which closes the debate. They have just installed a system of the police state that is going to solve the dynamics of the chaos. They believe that with this measure, they're going to bring people home again, so that those who need stability and order to live can benefit from this system. It means the reproduction of the world and life according to Max Weber. The logic behind this system is that one needs to leave his house every day, work, go back home, go shopping, manage his life and share everything with his family. It's a real need that the left cannot underestimate.
That is right. Workers need this same life too. They need security, work, and a decent life. Let's have a break, and then we will continue our program.
Estamos con Álvaro Ramos.
Today I am with Álvaro Ramos. In the first part, we talked about the essentials that people require. The majority of people fight and work for a civilized world, a dignified life, a stable job, etc. But the democratic system doesn't provide them with those elements, because it is a form of administration of a system. But others offer a different form of administration of the same capital system. In this system, they make everything viable in the moment of crisis. It doesn't take place only in this era. Haji Muhammad Suharto killed thousands and thousands of people during the coup d'etat in Indonesia in the past. We're talking about 500,000 dead people. Then they established a very harsh fascist regime against Sukarno. They had a democratic attitude of administration. Can you mention some examples in today's world that express themselves as neo-fascists?
Undoubtedly, I think we shall start with the U.S. I think that Donald Trump broke some traditions of the Republican Party. The Republican Party has always been a very right-wing party, but he cuts with some self-regulation that the same party had installed, like the idea that anything goes in denigration of any opponents. He broke the logic of the criteria of truth in political communication and attempted coups that he carried out just after leaving his mandate. This way of thinking has been replicated worldwide. It has formed an international style of governance known as Trumpism. For instance, there is Vox in Spain, Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil, Alternative for Germany in Germany, that is absorbing more fans. There are also representatives of this same trend in Italy and Greece and many other countries. What they have in common is precisely this modern form of installation on the political stage. Its forms are not like the old ultra-right. They don't actually use swastikas and they don't take up arms with anachronistic political marketing. They're absolutely modern, but their plans are very old. They apply the most brutal political bullying. They denigrate their opponents and ignore any kind of fair play in political disputes. I think there is also another reason for the formation of such movement, and that is the deprivation of contemporary societies, particularly in the West. The West is in a slow decline from the industrialization. Industrialization somehow created more technology, but also generated higher income jobs. This process is slowing down in Europe, the U.S., Canada, and Japan, where there is economic contraction, and we shall also mention the rise of Asia. Therefore, the change of actors in international geopolitics is reflected in the emergence of these groups that use pressure for their repossession. That's why the slogan of Trump is Make Trump Great Again. He wants to bring back the U.S. hegemony, which is in decline now. Trump believes that the U.S. is decaying not only as a global power, but in its economic structures, and therefore it needs to rebuild itself with a strong leader who is more protectionist, who focuses on a new form of industrialization and creates a new international hegemony based on unconquerable power.
Internacional basada en un poder incontestable.
Correct.
That's true. It is very important to consider what is really happening at the international level. For me, the Israeli Zionism is a concrete expression of neo-fascism. The people chosen by God, etc. It is actually my personal concern. The same thing happens in the U.S. with Obama, Biden, and even Trump. Last month, European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell said that Europe is a garden that is surrounded by savages. He used this racist phrase in relation with other countries and continents in the world, which we used to call them the third world nations. What do you think about the ideas, ideologies, and expressions of such leaders?
Que se escuchan en estos líderes que... Bueno, nuevamente lo que hay es una
necesidad. They need to reaffirm their exceptionalism in international politics. American exceptionalism has always reaffirmed the idea that the order of the international system and international law does not apply to powers. This point is fundamental in their logic of action. They believe that all other countries must submit to the order of international system based on international conventions. This logic was established for centuries in order to have an international system that could provide and maintain international peace. But they consider themselves as exceptions that can ignore this order. That is why they cannot turn a blind eye to these regulations, and this is reflected in a crucial body that is the United Nations Security Council, where they have dominance and make this exceptionalism clear. So they have this privilege of being able to violate international law, invade other countries, generate a series of elements that simply make the international order based on a claim to international law unable to function due to its own lack of coherence.
The U.S. national security above all other issues, right? In the case of Latin America, they speak of lithium, copper, forests, the oxygen, water, and everything else, but they're actually talking about a part that forms the national security of the United States. This is exactly what Laura J. Richardson recently mentioned publicly. I want to know how countries shall deal with this new neo-fascist wave that has a concrete base that is determined by the general crisis of the system of domination and ultimately the unipolar system that has sparked chaos all over the world. There will be a new era. Nowadays, we witness the war in Ukraine, and it's not the same as other battles because Russia is in a war with NATO and the U.S. Ukraine is a minor player in the scenario. I think that this is just the beginning of a much bigger confrontation. However, there are fascist forces in Ukraine. There is not a single legal political party there right now. The forces follow Volodymyr Zelensky's orders. This is really frightening. There are also progressive governments that are U.S. allies or under the command of the U.S. and have to maintain excellent relations with them, for instance, the government of Chile.
A mantener excelentes relaciones con ellos, como es, por ejemplo, el gobierno de Chile. Mira, yo creo que el caso particular de Ucrania es una sangría.
I think that the case of Ukraine is a bloody war that is before our eyes and a contemporary drama. Maybe we can compare it with those massacres of the Second World War where thousands and thousands of men were thrown into trenches, almost like the First World War, who died in the mud due to interests of great powers. One of the few signs of hope I've seen in this year of war is how Lula has traveled the world to say two things. The first one that is very important is that this conflict leads to massacres, and the second thing is to find a solution. China proposed a peace plan. To me, any reasonable actor who could read this plan should agree with it, because it is in the immediate solution to a conflict that will not be over in the short term. This conflict requires gradual actions. The first solution is to end the death of so many people from both parties in the conflict, stop the blood path. Secondly, we need conditions to respect the international law. In the third part, reparations for war victims and form a framework of understanding in a new context without exceptionalism. North American exceptionalism is a problem in this context. All the actors of international order and powers must act according to the framework of international respect. There's an old saying that says, respect brings peace, and this is what's been violated today.
Y eso hoy día es lo que hoy día se ha vulnerado. Bueno, Álvaro, te agradezco.
Thank you very much for coming to our program. However, the time was short. I hope to see you again. Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias.
Hasta luego.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
At least 45% of U.S. tap water contaminated with PFAS, forever chemicals. So far, the scale of contamination in local water systems and private wells outpaces detection and cleanup efforts. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Truthout, the United States Geological Survey, USGS, announced recently that at least 45% of tap water nationwide is likely contaminated with one or more type of per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, a family of harmful forever chemicals that do not break down in the environment and can now be widely detected in water supplies and virtually all of American people's bodies. Independent testing has found PFAS contamination in freshwater sources such as groundwater, rivers, and lakes, as well as drinking water at more than 2,800 sites across the U.S. But USGS says its study is the first to test both public and private water systems on such a broad and national scale. It's pretty shocking, but at the same time, not that shocking that PFAS is probably in 45% of tap water, because PFAS is so prevalent, Hayes said in an interview. PFAS is an extensive family of synthetic chemicals with a variety of consumer and industrial uses, ranging from cleaning products and nonstick lining in fast food packaging to firefighting foam. Research is ongoing, but exposure to high levels of some types of PFAS is linked to cancer and a host of other health problems, including hormone dysfunction and a weakened immune system. The chemicals also cause damage to the environment, where they can persist for decades in water and the bodies of fish and other wildlife. The USGS reports that there are more than 12,000 known types of PFAS chemicals, but testing cannot detect all of them at once. The USGS tested for 32 common types of PFAS at sites across the U.S. and modeled the results based on proximity to potential sources of PFAS pollution. Research hydrologist Kelly Smalling, the study's lead author, said USGS tested water directly from public water systems and kitchen sinks across the U.S. Smalling said in a statement recently, the study estimates that at least one type of PFAS of those that were monitored could be present in nearly half of the tap water in the U.S. Furthermore, PFAS concentrations were similar between public supplies and private wells. PFAS exposure often occurs via consuming contaminated food and water, or using products that contain PFAS, including some non-stick products and packaging. Testing suggests that most people in the U.S. are exposed to PFAS and have forever chemicals in American people's blood, especially perfluorooctane, sulfonic acid, PFOS, and perfluorooctanic acid, PFOA. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, PFOS and PFOA dominated the potential human exposure risk in USGS tap water samples. Nationally, there are thousands of potential and suspected industrial sources of PFAS pollution, ranging from airports and oil refineries to paper mills and manufacturers of paint and fishing products, according to the Environmental Working Group. Hay said industrial facilities that use or produce PFAS are often located near low-income areas and communities of color that are disproportionately burdened by air and water pollution. There are currently no federal clean water regulations for controlling this PFAS pollution, although the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, is reportedly developing regulations for some types of industries. In the meantime, the EPA is encouraging states to use their clean-up water permitting programs to limit the amount of PFAS contaminated water discharged into drinking water supplies and treatment facilities. The chemical companies that manufacture and sell PFAS itself have faced a deluge of lawsuits over PFAS contamination in drinking water supplies. 3 Million, a major producer of PFAS and related products, recently reached a $10.3 billion settlement with U.S. cities and towns facing PFAS contamination in municipal water systems. Three other PFAS sellers, including Chemours, DuPont, and Corteva, announced a similar $1.19 billion settlement over drinking water contamination last week. All four companies have denied wrongdoing. There are 30,000 to 40,000 industrial sites across the U.S. that are likely having PFAS discharges into local storm and wastewater streams, Hayes said, adding, so that settlement money is a drop in the bucket and they are going deal it with it forever. Another major source is military bases, where PFAS has long been a key ingredient in firefighting foam used to put out oil fires and burning jet fuel. Groundwater contaminated with PFAS has impacted people living on and around dozens of military bases. More than 400 current and former military sites are known to be contaminated with PFAS. Also, according to Hill, a new federal study estimates that toxic forever chemicals can be found in nearly half of U.S. tap water. Forever chemicals, also known as PFAS or per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, can be found in at least 45% of U.S. tap water, according to the study from U.S. Geological Survey, USGS, released recently. The study, which used modeling based on samples collected from 716 locations across the United States over several years, found urban areas are more at risk than rural ones when it comes to PFAS contamination. The chemicals were found in about 70% of areas that are either urban or have a known history of PFAS contamination, compared to just 8% of rural areas. It also found that the substances may be more common in the Great Plains, Great Lakes, Eastern Seaboard, and Central and Southern California regions.
It's night, dark and cold. I walk in the city alone in the crowd.
Islamic laws.
Every street, every store is filled with colors and smiles as before. I know clouds are hidden behind these faces. Is there anyone who has a sunny heart? I put on my headphones and play the song, which repeats the enchanting whisper. I say, why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. And we would like to actually express our condolences and sorrow and sadness for the martyrdom of, the master of the martyrs, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, peace be upon him. We're going to talk about some of the Islamic laws regarding the mourning ceremonies of Imam Hussein, or in commemoration of his martyrdom, and also Arba'in. Well, before that, let's take a listen to a short biography of Ayatollah Khamenei, and we'll be back. Don't go away. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahth al-Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahth al-Kharij, he started Bahth al-Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Shah Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws about mourning and Muharram based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Shah Javid, what is the Islamic law about using, for example, horses in some of the passion plays, in some of the shows that people hold or convene to commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, peace be upon him. And they use this horse, for example, as Zuljanah. Or they use, for example, they make cradles for the children of the infallibles or Imam Hussein alayhi salam, sure. So what's the Islamic law about it? And sometimes they take it too far and they kiss it. They somehow, it looks like worshipping that, So what's the law about this?
That's a good question. Of course, in some countries, like especially in the Indian subcontinent, a lot of people, sanctify Zuljanah and the cradles that they make, handmade cradles. And of course, they make what they call shabih, mm-hmm. of the tomb of Imam Hussein.
Yes.
And they actually take out the horses into the procession and then they start kissing it. Of course, as you rightly mentioned, they take it too far. And they actually go overboard in kissing these things.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to actually making Zuljanah or making cradles and the likes, of course, there is no problem in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no problem. But there is no evidence in Islamic Sharia, in the Islamic literature, to indicate that such a thing is actually recommended or,
yes.
Let's say, endorsed by the Islamic Sharia. Okay, per se, it is okay, there's no problem in it, but provided that it does not damage or tarnish the image of the school of Ahlul Bayt, because if you exaggerate, if you go too far, and that could have, it could be actually counterproductive. It may have a negative impact, mm-hmm. on the Islamic, on the image of that the Shia Islam is portraying and giving to other people. So one should be careful. One should actually make proper use of such things. Yes, and should not go overboard in sanctifying these things. Of course, Zuljanah is a regular Zuljanah. The horses that they actually adorn, the horses that they prepare for the day of Ashura, it cannot be the very Zuljanah or the horse that Imam Hussein alayhi wasalam mounted on the day of Ashura and fought the enemy. Okay, it cannot be. So it's not. It is just a regular horse, and therefore, it can be kissing it can be kind of taking it too far.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and I hope that everything like this kind of enthusiasm that the mourners have,
yes.
is always accompanied with a kind of
sensibility.
Sense and sensibility and intellect.
You're right.
Yes, and finding the middle ground is always
the middle position,
than the deficiency or the excess on either ends of the rope.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio after a short break. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammed Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws about mourning and Muharram based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, what is more important, the congregational prayer offered in the early portion of the time as it is always recommended in the religion?
Sure.
Or continuing with the mourning when it happens that it coincides with the call for prayer, for example?
You're right. Well, it is always appropriate for believers, for mu'mineen, to arrange their programs in such a way that it does not coincide with the time of the prayer, the timing, the prayer timing. So, azadari, can be done either before the time for prayer or a few, let's say, minutes or a few hours after the time for prayer. And to continue, doing azadari, indeed, if it is considered to be a kind of disregard to the prayer, is not appropriate. So there's no doubt as to the fact that congregational prayer and the prayer, even if it's not offered in a congregation, is wajib. It's always recommended to offer the prayers in their early prescribed times, on time, not in time, because you can offer the prayer anytime, even at the end of the time prescribed for the prayer. But it's highly recommended to offer the prayers in the early portion of the time. So if a person wants to join the prayer, he can leave azadari, and it's better for him to leave azadari and join the prayer, because there's more sawab in offering the prayer in the early portion of its prescribed time.
Okay, thank you. Well, there's another question I'd like to ask you, Sheikh Javid, and that is, if, such events commemorating the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, disturbs others, if such events disturb others, in some neighborhoods, for example, is it permissible to still do azadari or mourning?
Well, it depends from situation to situation. And, a straightforward answer cannot be given when it comes to azadari, because azadari is a collective ritual. It is done by Muslims, by Shia Muslims, in huge numbers. Now, these people come out into the street. They actually chant slogans. They recite elegies, and so this might cause kind of this might bother some people who do not participate, who do not subscribe to such practice, and therefore, if let's say we have discussed it previously also, if the believers are using loudspeakers and these loudspeakers are disturbing neighbors who are not probably Shia, then it's better to use these loudspeakers within the Imam Barga, within the Husayniyas, or the what they call takia khanas, okay, and these are places dedicated or devoted to the commemoration of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his family, and therefore it is generally speaking, it's not permissible to disturb others or to commemorate the event of Ashura in such a way that it causes, disturbance for other people. But okay, it could cause some disturbance, but who knows? Okay, if one individual comes, okay, this noise is disturbing me, it doesn't mean that people should stop doing it, because people have, this is the time, this is the season where people normally come out into the street and they actually commemorate the event of Ashura. So it might cause disturbance to some extent, but okay, if that is negligible, there's no problem, there's no objection to it.
I see. I think the same rule applies to drivers who turn up their volume of their players, for example, while driving, and they.
I think they are two. They are different from each other because, okay, drivers who play their, their what do you call their system, in such a loud manner that okay, people it causes. Headache and problem for other people. So they play their music, play haram music. That's something
else.
No,
I'm not talking about the music. I'm talking about the morning recordings or cassettes or players, whatever, they use.
Yeah, it could be the same ruling could apply to such.
Thank you very much, Shavit. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave mankind's heart it reawaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein plan to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred bridge. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new lands.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.